You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Saturday, January 12th, and this is my first occasional practice report for 2013, so Happy New Year! Let me talk about mostly Opus 10, number 10 today. I'm going to say a little bit about 10, number 8, and then I'm also going to talk to you about this new project. Actually, you know what? I'll start talking about my new project. So if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you might have noticed that a couple of things went up last week that weren't what you're used to hearing. So previously, I would post most weeks an episode like this where I talk and play. But I've got a New Year's resolution for 2013, which is that I'm going to spend at least 5 minutes of every practice session improvising, and I'm going to record that. I've decided for lots of different reasons that it's time for me to take improvisation from sort of the edge of my mind and of what I do and to make it be a thing that I actually work on and try to get better at, which it never has really been. It's always been something just sort of on the periphery. So I'm going to be taking 5 minutes of my practice day to improvise, and I'm going to record that. And then every week I'll listen to all of my little improvisations, and whatever I like the best, I'll put up online for you. I'm going to try and make it so that it's really obvious which ones are the little improvs and which ones are the full episodes. I haven't quite figured out how to do that yet with iTunes and all that, so it may just all be a little bit of a blur for a while. But when the students come back, there will be lots of very, very tech-savvy people that hopefully can help me with that. So if you're wondering what these little snippets of things are that don't quite sound like Chopin, it's me improvising and just trying to get better at that. So one of the things that I've found out while I've been improvising, a couple things actually. One is that I often like what I play better when I listen to it than while I play it. Sometimes while I play it, I think, oh, this is kind of boring. And then when I listen to it, it actually seems sort of soothing and nice. Although, of course, boring and soothing and nice could certainly be synonyms, right? Another thing I've found out is that apparently I really like waltzes a lot, which wasn't really something that I knew. I don't think of myself as, you know, I'm Jocelyn Swigger. I love a good waltz. I mean, you know, nothing against the waltz, but I wouldn't have thought that would be my form. But I sure seem to gravitate towards the pa. So that's kind of funny and something to either exploit or push against. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, you know, this means that 10 minutes of my daily practice session, I will play in a minute, by the way, I promise, but I do want to make this point. 10 minutes of my daily practice now, which is a fairly large chunk because I really only have 2 hours to practice on most days, and some days it's not quite that. 10 minutes of my practicing is not actually practicing in big air quotation marks. I have 2 minutes. The very first 2 minutes and 3 minutes are 3 minutes of stretching and 2 minutes of just silent meditation. And I've found that that makes a huge, huge difference. It's really, really helpful. So I've got 3 minutes of stretch, 2 minutes of silently meditate, and then 5 minutes of improvise. I haven't quite figured out yet whether the 5 minutes of improvisation happen at the beginning of the practice session or in the middle or at the end or later in the day. I'm still kind of playing around with that. So far I seem to be more interesting in my improvisation if it's after practicing, which is kind of what you would hope, right? You would hope that the practicing would make the improvisation, apparently can't say that word, more interesting. Anyway, that's what's going on with that. Let me tell you a little bit about Opus 10, number 10. This is this one. Oh my God, I haven't played it that fast. I'm trying to show off. Let me play it a little bit slower. I'm going to leave it for there right now. So here's a couple things with this etude. One is, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I've been complaining about not being able to kind of find an in or wrap my head around it. Partly because one of the games of this etude is that the articulation keeps changing. So first it's, right? You can hear that the top one is the main guy. And then it changes to, right? And then it changes to every two. And then it gets staccato, which means short if you don't speak musical Italian. Right? And the different editions don't necessarily agree on what happens when. So I have been waffling, and not really feeling like I could commit to an articulation because I was feeling like I couldn't commit to an edition. Anyway, I just decided, you know, I'm just going to work from the Henley right now, which is one of the Urtext editions. I actually have ordered, like I said I would, I've ordered the Badura Skoda Complete Opus 10 and Opus 25. I've had the Opus 25, but I'm ordering the Opus 10. And I've also ordered the Paderewski edition of these etudes, so I'm pretty excited about that. Those should come in pretty soon. The Badura Skoda I really like a whole lot because it's an Urtext, but it also does a really nice job of annotating in the music what different editions and different sources say about things. So, for example, sometimes the Henley or the Mikuli, they're the two, you know, the other two that I've been sort of playing around with lately, they'll differ, but they won't have a note right there that says, by the way, this note might be an A natural in these other sources. And I really, really like that the Badura Skoda is transparent about that. So I think I'm going to be transferring most of my working to the Badura Skoda when it gets here. And that's another Urtext. Anyway, for right now, I've just decided, heck with it, I'm going to sit here with this Henley Urtext and play from that. And the thing that really, I think I've had a shift in my thinking about this piece. I'm actually really enjoying working on it right now. I was walking into school one morning last week, and this melody came into my head, right? The melody from the etude. Oops. And then it goes on from there, right? And I thought, you know, let me just practice that melody as a melody. Now, it turns out that this piece goes through, and I think one of the reasons it's a really wonderful piece of music and not just an etude, I mean, you know what I mean, but one of the things that makes it compositionally really interesting and really wonderful to listen to is that it has all these really cool key changes. He's really into the German six chords in here especially, but I don't think I'm going to go all theory geek on you today. Anyway, he has all these wonderful transitions where he goes from like here, this is at the end of measure 16, here. So we end in here, we're in A flat. I'm not going theory geek. I said I wasn't going to, but anyway, here we are in. So we have this nice color change to here. I'm playing simplified chords for you. And then we have this nice minor color here. Sorry, here we go. And then here's this nice peak of the phrase. I want to show you this thing that happens here. Okay, then we do minor. And then we go to here. Isn't that nice? Anyway, so I decided, let me just think about this melody as a melody and see if I can find my way through the piece with that. And as you can hear, I have not yet gotten good at that, right? So part of it was practicing with the chords, but I also wanted to just play it as a melody. Anyway, so I took this out and I looked at it as a melody and made a discovery. And of course, you'll say, well, that would have been a really good thing to discover the first time you ever looked at the piece. Hello, but you know, we make our discoveries when we make them. The dynamics of this piece are actually really different than I thought they were. I have been thinking of this piece as a piece that is mostly loud with the occasional soft moment. And actually, according to this Henley edition, but I'm not going to get all waffly about that right now, I may when the Badura Skoda and the Paderewski come in a couple weeks, but for now, this piece is actually mostly quiet with a loud introduction. And that's a pretty different way of thinking about it. I mean, there are a couple of loud moments in there. There's a couple of peaks. But, you know, the last two pages are soft, which is not really what I would have thought. I mean, we get sort of loud in measure 43. It's loud. This is this nice moment. It's kind of the big peak. It's the dominant preparation, getting ready for the, now we're going to go home, right? So it's, so this is loud. Here it's going somewhere, right? I'm sorry. There we go. I want to get to this point. I can't reach that. I can sort of reach it, but it's a little scary, so I just am going to have to be scared there and deal with it. And then here, which I always had been thinking of as being a really loud moment, right? It sounds like the peak of the piece. I'm going to play it like it's the peak of the piece. Right? It sounds like it should be this big, flashy bravura moment. Except that's totally not what he wrote in the Henley edition or text edition. But it looks like the other ones, I think, are probably going to agree with this too. So listen to how cool this is. He says, delicatissimo, which you can translate as a cognate, delicate, like extremely delicate. Legatissimo, really, really smooth. Dolcissimo, really sweet. All right? So we have this crescendo, meaning getting louder, here. This is back to measure 45. So we're building. And then we have our peak here. And then we're immediately quiet. And then he has it really soft. Which is just magical. I mean, that is just beautiful. It's so much more interesting than, you know, really loud peak, and then we come back to the beginning, and it's loud like it was. Like, this is really, really something gorgeous. I did want to point out one thing where I am not doing what the Urtext says. In the last three measures, this is after, so our last dynamic marking was pianissimo, which means really quiet. And then he says, get a little slower, and then he says, very sweetly, which you can think of as being a little bit louder and warming it up a little bit. But then he says, keep getting quieter and very extremely light. And then smorzando, which means just fade away, right? And then in the last three bars, the last three measures, in the Henley edition, it says to play loud. I'm going to play this, what this sounds like to you. I think this sounds terrible, and I am not going to do it. And McCooley and Schutt both don't say to do it, and this forte is not in the first edition, so I am not doing it. But I'm going to show you what I'm not going to do, just to show you why I'm waffling about editions so much. This is going to be from here. So this is supposed to be very sweet and quiet and getting softer and very lightly, extremely lightly, and getting quieter and fading away. And then it says loud. Which I just think is terrible. It's this like jarring, you know, you sort of soothe your savage beast into this lovely lull, and you feel so wonderful, and it's just so beautiful, and then you go, wake up! Like, that's not what I'm going to do. Unfortunately for me, these last three bars are actually quite a bit harder to play beautifully and softly than Like a Big Truck, right? So this... So that's going to take a little bit of work to make it beautiful and quiet the way I want it. But I'm pretty excited about thinking about the dynamic shaping of this piece, partly because it makes all of the timbres and the textures be the main point of the piece, which I know is what it is. I know. I should have thought of these things before. But I feel like I understand why Chopin wrote it compositionally now, and not just why he wrote it as a technical exercise, which is, of course, the etude part of it, right? And the technical exercise part of it, I also wanted to say, I'm coming off of winter break and vacation and, you know, not practicing, and I've actually been in the office for the last week, but there's been a lot of administrative things, and we're doing a search, and it has not been me sitting at the piano for 6 hours a day, which sounds really wonderful, but that's just not what it's been. So I actually have been working on one of the particular things about this piece, which is supporting of the thumb on the right hand. I mean, obviously it's about rotation too, of course, but if this is all of these notes are the thumb and then the rest of the hand, thumb, rest of the hand, thumb, rest of the hand, thumb, and the rest of the hand. So if the thumb isn't supported, it just doesn't work. So I've been trying to kind of wiggle my thumb around a lot, even when I've been away from the piano, wiggling out to make it supported. I talked about this before the break. My left thumb is much more stable than my right thumb. My right thumb has some support, but not as much as it needs. So I've been kind of wiggling around. I think it's getting a little better. Anyway, speaking of which, the improvisation that I'm going to play for you, or that I'm going to post, I'll make it in a separate thing, is an exercise that I just sort of made up for myself with my thumb and doing rotation and keeping the thumb supported, like this kind of thing. And I thought, why not make it into a piece since I'm doing it anyway? So it's a little bit of an exercise that I made up myself that happens that. So that's what that is. Okay, that's most of what I want to tell you about Opus 10 number 10 and how I'm kind of thinking about it right now. I am working on moments of what is the articulation here, but I mostly am trying to think about it musically rather than playing it. I'm not so much dealing with the technical issues of it right now. I'm trying to really make decisions about musically how I want it to go, and that's a pretty fun way of thinking about it. So that's pretty much what's going on with Opus 10 number 10. Just wanted to give you a quick report about a moment of the universe giving me what I asked for. I decided pretty recently, and I can't remember if I wrote it down or said it to you or what, but that I need to start looking for opportunities to play through just small groups of these etudes, because even though there's not really any of them that feels like it's polished and ready. Of course, part of the way you get something polished and ready is you play it for an audience, right? And so I need to create and embrace performing opportunities for these etudes, even though that's pretty scary. So I decided that, and one came along. We are doing audition days for my conservatory. So please come and study with me if you are a piano student and thinking of coming and auditioning. Anyway, we're doing audition days, and the first one is January 19th, which is in a week. And I have been asked to play a little bit for a sort of greeting kind of thing for that. So I'm going to play three of these etudes for that. And I think I'm going to play, no, I know I'm going to play 25 number 2, which is this one. That one. And I'm going to play 10 number 3, this one. And I'm going to play the Revolutionary Etude, which is this one. You know, which goes into this whole thing. So I'm going to play those three. And there's part of me that thinks I should play some other ones, because all three of those I've played once before in the world. And I need to add some more that I need to start getting out there. But I also, it's in a week, and so I'm going to play those three. One of the pieces I was thinking about maybe playing was 10 number 8. And I played it and recorded it this morning in my practice. And it was terrible. It was so awful. But the thing that was really interesting about it is that what was awful about it was specifically, like, the sort of most awful thing, was actually the left hand. The left hand was bizarrely out of time and really clunky and unmusical and had no phrasing. So, you know, that's stuff I can work on. Like, I can work on the left hand being in. It sounded more like. It was just awful. I won't even try to make you listen to that. Anyway, so I'm going to pay some attention to the left hand of that. I will say also that there's a moment in the middle, right? Because the middle part is always the hardest, often the hardest, that just sounds like a big old mess. This thing is just. The voicing was off and it was sloppy and ugly. It sounded terrible. And then there's a moment in the last two pages. It's kind of the coda. It's really sort of the ending of the piece. We've landed back in F major and we're sort of done. And then it's just supposed to be lovely finishing up. I'm having a really hard time keeping straight exactly what happens when. This thing. There's variations of this. That's one, and there's one, And it's just hard. Like, there's all these things that are in the key of, they're decorating the chord of C major. Or, so I don't quite have that analytically figured out. And it's going to be one of those things that I just have to go, this is the one that goes up an octave. This is the one that goes up a third. Or this is the one that just goes up the chord and doesn't skip something. And I've thought about that already some, but it's not totally ingrained in my head. So I've got to get that set before I inflict it on an audience. and indeed, before I inflict it on you. So I'm going to pay some attention to 10 number 8. But I am going to be really focusing on 10 number 10 for the next little while, because I want to bring that from a piece that I can't play at all to a piece that I can play the way I don't like it, right? That's the first step. And then, of course, the next step is to be able to play it the way I do like it. So that is most of what's going on in my practicing. I'm also going to be taking not a break from the Chopin, but it's going to be not the only thing going on. I'm going to be doing a recital in Boston on February 23rd with a tenor, and I'm really excited about that. This is the recital that I was learning the music for in August, and then I broke my finger in September, and so a week before the recital, so I had to cancel it. So we're going to do that, but it's going to take a bit to get some of that music back. The Zemlinsky pieces are quite tricky, although beautiful. And there's some Poulenc that's a little bit tricky too. So, and some Ives. There's a lot of actually pretty challenging music on this concert. So I'm so excited that I'm going to get to play it. And I'm so excited that I have 10 working fingers. Let me point that out. But that's something that I'm going to be really focusing on in the next few weeks as well. So that's it. You can find out about this project at playitagainswick.com. I'd love your comments if you've got them. I'd love your reviews on iTunes if you've got those. You can follow me on Twitter @JocelynSwigger. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy.